Welcome to a new episode of the Indian Independent Films Podcast. This is Rahul Desai here, film critic for Film Companion. I have with me Ishita Sengupta, film critic for OTT Play. And we are going to do a podcast that we've been putting off for a while. I think because we were procrastinating a bit because it's a little difficult to talk. It's a little difficult to discuss. It's been a fairly... It's been a fairly interesting month in terms of Hindi cinema, and there have been a lot of sequels, and one of them has broken a lot of records. So we're going to be talking about Gadar 2 and Dreamgirl 2. Gadar 2 released, as you know, a few weeks ago. It's a sequel to the Gadar, which was 20 years ago, again starring Sunny Deol. And as we speak, it's been earning gazillions of rupees. And the second one, of course, is more recent. It just released yesterday. It's a sequel to Dreamgirl, the Ayushman Khurrana film of 2019, which was a big hit as well. We weren't particularly keen to talk about these films in terms of cinema because both of them, at least for both of us, are absolutely atrocious films. And I don't think there's a lot to contribute on that front. But what is interesting has been sort of the landscape in which we viewed these films and how Gadar 2 especially has been doing some phenomenal business for some reason. And we're here to discuss a bit of that. We're going to start, in fact, we'll start with Gadar 2. It's been a couple of weeks. And of course, as a little bit of history about the film, Anil Sharma, who made it back 20 years ago, it was the biggest hit of that year. In a year in with Lagan, Dil Chahta, it was a golden year. It's a continuation of that, it's now the 1970, on the brink of the 1971 Indo-Pak War, and Tara Singh now has a family. He has a son who's grown up, and the son, now it's about him going to Pakistan to rescue his son. And there's obviously a very, very evil Pakistani villain who's the general of the Pakistani army. And oddly enough, Sunny Deol disappears for a lot of the first half of the film because the son goes to Pakistan to rescue his father, who he thinks has been kidnapped during one of the missions. But as it turns out, Tara Singh was alive all along. And then I don't even know why I'm talking about the premise, but it's a bit of a mess. Ishita, let's start with, first of all, your homework for Gadar 2, whether you watched Gadar as a homework or your experience of watching the film, because we, of course, did watch it together and we were in for quite a rude shock.
Yeah, because, I mean, on a very fundamental level, as you rightly pointed out, that Gadar 2 does not qualify to be like cinema in the traditional sense. But also I feel like even as an obviously jingoistic film, even then it does not really count, because I feel it was a very, very boring film, for the lack of a better word. And I think the audience which we watched with, their reactions kind of pointed to that, because obviously everyone went, because there was Sunny Deol and he was, as you said, absent for the most part. So every time he was on screen, and of course there was his partner in crime, the hand pump, there was obviously a lot of anticipation. You could sense it, and then nothing would happen, because I'm assuming that the film was a sort of a launch vehicle for Anil Sharma's son, who obviously has debuted earlier, but this obviously is a bigger canvas. So even as a very jingoistic film, the Gadar 2 does not cut it. It's very, very flat, and it's also very, very dated. We are at a time when even very pro-nationalistic films are also being well made, which obviously contributes to a lot of our ambiguity in deciding whether the film is good or not. But in terms of Gadar 2, I felt like the writing was on the wall, there were things were just being overlooked. I don't even want to point to a scene. I'm just saying that there were a lot of skips and jumps, and there were a lot of narrative discrepancy, which does not, these things do not float anymore. So I was very surprised. I still am that the film is as big a hit as it is. What about you, though?
No, so why do you think that is? Because see, as you very rightly pointed out, I think when we were watching the film in the morning show, sure, a lot of it was full because of the nostalgic value of the first film, which did very well for its own reasons back then. But it was a different India then. And it was a little more innocent, the nationalism then, you know, it didn't feel as bitter and ugly and as sort of defiant and agenda driven as it does now, which Gadar 2 does feel. It's like I genuinely feel Sunny Deol is not a smart man. I don't feel he's a good, I mean, he's of course a big star of, you know, that of the previous era. And he doesn't come across as the smartest of cookies. I don't think he's very smart in choosing what he does, but it does feel like, you know, they've sort of climbed onto the jingoism bandwagon in this post Kashmir Files era, in this post Uri era, and they've basically turned that nostalgia into something that's far more heinous. And you do sense that Gadar 2 is far uglier than its predecessor, because I'm not a big fan of Gadar also, but it did have its merits in the sense of how a lot of it did unfold in Pakistan and were also willing to engage in a conversation with the fact that the common man in Pakistan is not very different from the common man in India. The families are not too different, and it's the politicians and the armies that are driving them apart. You know, you don't see a lot of that here, even though the film keeps sort of almost getting confused about its own identity, because he is of course married to a Pakistani woman who is played by Amisha Patel, who looks like a mannequin in this film, and because he's married, because the main character is married to a Pakistani woman, the film very reluctantly has to keep admitting that, you know, the Pakistani people are not too different, but it's the strings that are running them that are very evil and very heinous. And the Islamophobia is very blatant in a lot of scenes. In other scenes, it's like, okay, there is good Muslim, bad Muslim. So, you know, even politically, it's very muddled, but it is also very much a film of our time. And we did see the reactions in the morning show. They were getting bored for most parts. A lot of them were getting annoyed till the interval, because there's not a lot of Sunny Deol, even though it was promised. And there was a lot of Anil Sharma's son, who plays Sunny Deol's son in the film. He has his own love story in Pakistan, which was one of the worst executed sort of love stories I've ever seen. And then in the second half, of course, when Sunny Deol decides to go to the enemy, quote unquote, land and sort of cause wreak havoc there, that's when the film sort of gives its audience what it had promised. And that's when we see a lot of the people laughing at the film. I felt a lot of the audiences were laughing at the fact that Sunny Deol is still shouting a lot. He's still taking the hand pump. He's still doing a lot of nonsensical dialogue bazi and acting in the film. And it's amusing, because I thought when people were watching it, I was like, there's no way this film is going to do well, because people are going to come, have a good time, laugh at the film, maybe get nostalgic about the good old days when Sunny Deol used to shout at everything and go back. But, you know, as it turns out, India's population sort of ensured that even watching it once has resulted in some record-breaking box office collections, which frankly came as a surprise. I'm not going to be elitist about it and say, oh, I didn't know there was another India who actually wanted to watch these kind of films. I'm very much aware of the single screen audiences. But as a film itself, it barely qualifies as a film. And even though people were hating it while watching it, they were more than happy to see one or two Pakistan hating scenes and one or two Muslim hating scenes, which made up for the mediocrity of the entire film, which I found very odd. Did you feel the same way?
Yeah, and as you said, like, you know, because when I was watching the film, and I think you get a sense of what the film can do when you watch it outside the cocoon of the film critics, where we generally watch when you're watching it with normal, like, regular people. And there were, in the morning show, it was a full house, and there were a lot of people who by the second half were literally, like as you said, laughing, and they were yawning also. So in my head, I thought that there's no way the film would work. But what really like really confuses and flummoxes me about Gadar being such a big hit is that how strong is nostalgia, you know, and how big a role it can play. But the tricky bit here is that you know, the when Gadar 1 came, I don't know. I mean, of course, it was like a propagandist film, but I feel it was also using the interfaith love story as a centerpiece. I feel like, you know, and I felt that was what was drawing people. But here, the love story, which, as you said, was the worst thing we have seen in recent times, was a subset of the jingoism that was happening. So as an audience, like, even if I take out the filters of good, bad, ugly, I just don't see myself liking the film in any respect, in any aspect. So, So I think what really confuses me about the phenomenon of the monstrosity of Gadar 2's success is that obviously there have been people who have watched it twice. You know, these numbers just can't come like with one viewing. And we have seen films in the past which had great opening, like a Thugs, for example, Thugs of Hindustan, which obviously because it's a huge star power, but it keeps tapering off because people realize it. So I'm yet to wrap my head around Gadar 2's success. It has to be obviously a nostalgia, but it really, it troubles me to think how strong a nostalgia factor can play, because if this is any precedent, then a lot of films which were probably an anomaly back then and a norm now will start, will start having franchises. And we know, and see, the point is that a film like Gadar 2, it's very obvious the way it unfolds that there's little effort that has been made, and that it was essentially made to cash on the success of the first film. That here was a filmmaker who said that, you know, who said that I started this whole, or whatever, I was one of the founding members of the nationalism that is now such a big deal, and I want a piece of the pie. And this is very troubling because he actually got it, and there will be a lot of filmmakers who will now try to repeat it, you know, which will only add to the noise that is happening, and it's not even translating in well-made film. Like, there's literally no semblance of an effort. And also for Amisha Patel, I mean, I have literally no words to say how, you know, there are, so obviously she's Sakina, she's reprising her role as Sakina, who is a Muslim from, you know, her family went to Pakistan, she couldn't during partition, she married Tara Singh. And there are moments when, and most of the film basically takes place centering on Sunny Deol and the son, and she is left behind. And she's praying, she's either like stretching her hands like people do in Islam, or she's folding her hands. And at some point, I thought she didn't know what to do with her hands. Like, she's so confused, Amisha Patel, at this, you know, at doing this film. But good for her, I guess. I mean, it's a big hit. So, but I don't know. I have no answers to why the film worked, except that nostalgia played a big role, and it's not the best news out there.
Yeah, it's also a mix of nostalgia and hatred, right? Like, it's India, a lot of the nationalism in India is not love for the country, it's hate for other countries and cultures, right? Like, it's a lot of it is basically a mix of that. And it's like the anti-Pakistan stance is more seductive than the pro-India stance in a lot of sense. And I think a lot of films get a lot of these kind of dishonest and like terrible films. Anil Sharma is a terrible director. I hope he's listening to this. And, you know, a lot of these kind of exploitative films tend to get that, you know, that if you put down the Muslims, if you put down the other culture, if you put down the community or the entire country, which is, let's be honest, it's Pakistan is synonymous with Muslims. So in a way, Gadar 2 is basically very much Islamophobic. When it says that Pakistan is a certain kind of country, it's basically saying Muslims are a certain kind of people. It's just using Pakistan as a surrogate to say that. And and I see a lot of these films finding more and more ways to say that without being too direct. Of course, Kashmir Files was shamelessly direct, and, you know, Kerala Story is shamelessly direct. But a lot of these films sort of see an opportunity to capitalize on that hatred, which is such a strong emotion these days in this political climate, that the current government has gone, you know, as tight so hard to sort of weaponize, and they're succeeding at that. And we see that in mainstream Bollywood. We see a lot of the producers climbing onto the business bandwagon saying, if people want hatred, we'll give them hatred. And we are seeing that in a film like Gadar 2, which was, in a way, also the first film was also sort of, a lot of it was the interfaith, as you said, the interfaith love story. A lot of it was fairly innocent in that sense. Like, even it was more like an unruly child that you'd rap on the knuckles for being a little stupid. But still, you know, you didn't begrudge it earning a shitload of money. But this one says a lot more about the country we live in. This one says a lot more about the fact that we were a little hopeful after Pathaan, when it earned all that money and broke a lot of records. We were a lot very hopeful for the direction that Hindi cinema might go in. And we became even more hopeful after the failure of Adipurush as a film, as an Indian film. Because I expected Adipurush to do the kind of business that Gadar 2 is. And when that failed, I was like, okay, maybe this is a direction towards the 2024 elections. Maybe things are changing. Maybe Hindi cinema is a representation of that, and maybe the return of Shah Rukh Khan and the Khans in general might not be such a bad thing, because the audiences are telling the government what they basically want. But we were obviously mistaken, because Gadar 2 is, for whatever one step forward that Pathaan took us, Gadar 2 is like 5 steps behind. And we are basically back to the Kashmir file saga last year, and we are back to and Gadar 2 is one of the only films, only like sort of jingoistic films that is made on a big budget and is still earning triple and four times its budget, because films like Kashmir Files and Kerala Story are made on nothing and they're earning like 300 crores globally. So they found a formula to basically distort facts and sort of feed into the religious frenzy going on. And it's an easy business way of earning money. But Gadar 2 has actually gone ahead and capitalized on its budget, on its nostalgia, on its scale, on its superstar who's not very bright, and that's it. And it's I didn't expect the formula to work at this point, especially in a post-Pathaan era, and it's a little depressing to see that.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. I just find it very what I find worrisome is that you know, even as a hate mongering film, it's not very good. What I mean to say is that a film at least needs to translate its intent. And what my experience of watching Gadar 2 was that it was such a shoddily made film that even I was not angry enough by it. Yeah. You know, like, by the time those edges came to me, they were blunt. So I mean, I get it. Like, it was a very agenda-driven film, and it kind of tells of the time we are in, which is not the best thing. But the film left me feeling nothing except, you know, a lot of boredom. So I don't know. Maybe probably we are in the minority. Also, I think that do you think at this time with Pathaan and with, like, if we take away the films that they have done, if we just look at the stars who you know, the resurgence of the stars and the amount of money that they have won, like a Shah Rukh Khan or a Sunny Deol, do you think that we famously live in a time when there are no superstars, but do you think that we are again waking up to these superstars, that it doesn't matter what film they are doing, or probably it does, but it also matters who is headlining that film?
Yeah, I think I think what the pandemic has done is push back our movie watching culture a few years, or maybe a decade. I know a lot of people are saying that, okay, you know, it's sort of accelerated the advent of streaming, and there are more long form stories being told, and there are more there's a variety of voices out there. There's more opportunity, and sure, we have taken to streaming in a decent way, but that does not signal it. It's basically, what it's done is sort of polarized the movie watching culture now, or the entertainment culture in general. You know, there's no middle route anymore. I feel like what it's done is, of course, it's brought back the superstar, it brought back the big screen experience, because people were starved of it for so long. And because of that, you know, people are just going to watch anything that has familiar faces from their younger years. And whether it's a good film or not, because Pathaan wasn't a good film. It was just entertaining. It was just lucky. And I'd say that's what it's done. I guess the pandemic has sort of pushed us back in a way, even though we'd like to believe that it's changed the way we watch movies. It may have changed the way we expect things from our entertainment industry, from culture in general. But I think in terms of Hindi films and Hindi cinema and feature length films, I think it's absolutely destroyed the middle film and the independent films. And it has now made it only a big screen sort of monopoly again. And this was where we were like 15 years ago. Of course, we are very proud of our superstar culture. We are very proud of the Khans and the Kumars and the fanaticism behind them. But I don't think it's necessarily a good thing in terms of the future, because these are people in the late 50s and early 60s. And we're still holding on to them like they're in the 30s. And we're still holding on to them because of what we've gone through in the last few years, and we want something comforting and familiar. And this, I'm talking about the whole of India. I'm not just talking about us. And I guess that's what's happening. And it's not very encouraging, because I did think we were moving in a new direction when streaming started in 2016-17 in India. And the Shah Rukhs and the Salmans and the Akshays were all starting to have flop films. They were losing hold of their superstar value. And now we are starting to sort of take sides in terms of what kind of superstar we want, because we are very happy about Shah Rukh's comeback story, his underdog story. We're very happy that he's back and he's earning a whole lot of money and he's again the sort of superstar he always was. But in the long run, I don't think that's a good thing.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that there's with every passing day, I feel there is a distinction between the films which can come to the theater and what can come to streaming. And somehow, even for the bigger stars, I feel like streaming has become their dumping ground. Like for Akshay or Salman, the films which probably will not do that well comes on streaming. So I guess, I mean, it's probably like a backward step in that direction. Yeah. And which is very worrying, because you feel like that middle path genre of films which basically had started and they were doing well, like the Ayushman Khuranas and the Rajkumar Rao, and do you see their space at all in theater? Because I feel like they are more and more gravitating towards streaming with their films because of the sudden monopoly of the bigger stars.
I guess so. I mean, I'd have to sort of, there is, as I said, the monopoly of the bigger stars, and it's basically there is no in-between route now. And there is, of course, more space in streaming. And the problem is even the streaming industry is very slowly morphing into the film industry. The same sort of dynamic is taking place there, because stars and big production houses are cracking deals with the big streamers. And I don't think independent voices are getting a chance there. It's just about how you can get the maximum eyeballs and the best collaborations. And of course, some have broken through the clutter. But I feel like a lot of these stars have been sort of like Shah Rukh and the Deols and the Kumars. And, I think a lot of them have resisted streaming in the sense long form or experimenting. And I think this has only validated their stance in their heads, at least. And because for every comeback or rise of Shah Rukh, there will also be a sort of pushing force to bring Sunny Deol back into the limelight, or an Akshay Kumar back into. Both of them had massive hits, in the same week. So, it's never going to be either or all. And that is worrying, as we were discussing. And sort of disturbed me a little was the fact that a lot of people who are technically more sensible voices, liberal voices, even critics, even reviewers, bloggers, everyone, commentators on Hindi cinema, a lot of them have been celebrating that week for how much money it's earned, and it's apparently earned the maximum money for any week in Hindi cinema, because OMG2 and Gadar 2 sort of released in the same week and have broken all records because of that. And it was the Independence Day weekend, which didn't help matters. So it turned out, and of course, on a business front, it's great for the industry. But a lot of people have been celebrating it without acknowledging the fact that Gadar 2 is a deeply problematic film, and it is not a good sign of where it goes. And I still don't believe in, you know, putting it under the mass bracket and celebrating how well it does mass. I think that's a cop-out in terms of criticism. And I think that's a cop-out in terms of, like, using terms to justify bad filmmaking. And a lot of the senior reviewers still do that, which I don't find very, very smart of them. And I think that entire... that entire sort of attitude that, oh, Hindi cinema is back and Sunny Deol has rescued us and Akshay Kumar has had a hit after so long and Hindi cinema is alive and kicking, I don't think that's a good thing. People are forgetting the context. People are not acknowledging the film. People are congratulating Sunny Deol and Anil Sharma as if they've made a great film, and that divide needs to be made, just as it was made last year when Kashmir Files earned so much money. A lot of the industry kept away from it, and they were very notoriously wary of commenting on that film because they knew how nonsensical it was and what an anomaly it was. And they aren't doing the same with Gadar 2 because they're looking at it as a Sunny Deol vehicle, and they're looking at it as a return of, like, a superstar again without really acknowledging what the themes are about. And that again is a problem with the discourse here. You know, they don't see the nuances of it.
Yeah, I mean, as you said, you know, that, and I'm not even trying to be salty here, but the tendency behind celebrating Gadar 2, even among critics, is that it brings back the grammar of what Hindi films used to be. And yeah. I find it very strange because, you cannot celebrate the past without questioning it. And I feel like for a film like Gadar 2, it obviously uses the grammar of a Hindi film, which we are comfortable with, to tell a very vicious story. And to just celebrate, the form of it and not really look into what it is trying to espouse is, at least among film critics, is really strange, because... I'm not entirely sure how much of celebrating what a typical Hindi film stands for, and more so because in today's day and age, when it is becoming a rare thing, is really yeah. great. But I think that's a good segue to bring the yeah. second film which we wanted to talk to, which is Rahul. Do you want to do the honors?
In fact, I was going to give you the honors for this film, Dreamgirl 2. It released yesterday. It's a sequel to Dreamgirl, which was a big hit back in 2019. Stars Ayushman Khurrana in probably his worst role. Ishita, you can maybe say a few lines about the film before we express our frustration at it.
I mean, okay. So, Dreamgirl 2, just to bring the point which we were making with Gadar 2 also, that obviously it's like it's a cash cow. It's made to cash on the success of the first film, which was Dreamgirl, which is in 2019. It was a huge hit. And much like how Gadar 2 also has the grammar of the Hindi film we are very familiar with, Dreamgirl 2 also has a very David Dhawan-esque style. Yeah. It has the protagonist, his name is Karam, which is played by Ayushman in probably his like worst role, and he lives in Mathura with his father, who is Anu Kapoor, and he loves a girl, which is played by Ananya Pandey, and the girl's father tells him that he needs to get a job, only then he can marry the daughter. So Ayushman does the most obvious thing in the world: he becomes a bar dancer. And obviously, this is a spiritual extension of the first film, where Ayushman's character used a girl's voice and worked at a call center to talk to men. So here, he basically wears the dress, and like as had happened in the first film, men fall for her, which is the Pooja character, left, right, and center. Hmm. So yeah, that's about it. I think I summed up the film better than
yeah
I expected in my head.
Yeah, no, that's true. And of course, you know, as people know, Ayushman famous for his social message comedies and dramas. Here, of course, no social message other than the fact that, you know, Ayushman is playing a woman in the film. So he starts to realize how tough women have it in life, which is as incidental as common sense in this film. you know, in general, first of all, I was not surprised the 2019 film was a hit. It had something going for it. It was a very lesser Vicky Donner. It had a social message about sort of urban isolation, about sexual repression amongst men in North India, and how that can result in, you know, stigmas and taboos, and how they turn to the easiest possible option. And, you know, Ayushmann Khurrana, at least playing a woman's voice, so to say, was still a little more plausible than something like this. And I get where you're going with this. You're trying to, as you said, recreate the David Dhawan Govinda comedies of the 90s. You're trying to do an extended Kapil Sharma show or an extended Great Indian Comedy Circus for, say, more than 2 hours here. And because it's just one sort of slapstick pun after another, it's just one skit after another. And it's a lot of it is, you know, lowest hanging fruit humor. A lot of it is lowest common denominator humor. Nothing really funny about it, lot offensive about it. But, you know, what I find interesting is Ayushmann Khurrana in general sort of choosing to do. He's been fairly open about the fact that he wanted a commercial success, especially because Dreamgirl was probably the biggest commercial success of his career. And his career has been impressive. You know, like he's tried different things, even though he is pigeonholed into a certain social message bracket. He has tried different things, and what's depressing is that last year when he did do some of his better sort of work, which is basically An Action Hero and Dr. G, not a lot of people watched it. So I almost expected him to do a sequel to Dreamgirl because it was his biggest success, and because he had tasted blood with it, and he realized how easy it is to sort of be the progressive voice in a sense and then do something as lazy as this and earn a shitload of money so that he can scratch that itch and then maybe continue doing his social message dramas on the side. It just feels too by design, and it's a little sad to see him in this sort of role. Of course he's going to be successful in it, and of course the film is going to do well, but in terms of his career arc, you could almost see it coming because as we noticed, he's not had a lot of financial success. At least his films haven't had a lot of box office success lately. And you can see him basically taking the route. Rajkumar Rao took a couple of years ago He's back sort of he's back on track right now because he's again back to sort of showcasing his talent and doing some very interesting work in the streaming space. But Ayushmann Khurrana is sort of somewhat stuck in the past.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think last year he did some phenomenal work. Action Hero was like one of the better films I watched last year. And Dr. G took me completely by surprise. The fact that both these films didn't do well was, as you said, you know, it kind of pointed to the fact that he would probably do a film which he has done before, which obviously being a sequel has a readied audience already. But, you know, like the thing is that even though I'm not the biggest fan of Ayushmann Khurrana, like I don't find him the most versatile actor out there, but his filmography, you know, is very, very impressive. And he took big swings when he didn't need to. And yeah. I feel like it's really sad to see him giving in now as a, you know, rightly pointed out that Rajkumar Rao also had, he went through a phase like that. So I really hope that it's a phase for Ayushmann too, because the thing with Ayushmann is that I feel that even though he might not be the best part about a film, according to me, I feel that he's one of those actors who, when he stars in a film, it automatically evokes some curiosity in you to know what is the film about. In a good or a bad way, like for people like us, I think my first question would be like, you know, okay, now what is the social message he's trying to say, which I feel Dr. G subverted very well. But I feel like when I went to watch Dreamgirl 2 and I kept thinking, okay, now what is the social message? There is one stray line where he says that ladki hona उतना मुश्किल नहीं है लड़की बनना उतना मुश्किल नहीं है लड़की होना something on those lines which he meant that you know to be a woman is very difficult and whatever, but obviously that was just like a very performative stance from him, and so I really hope that this is a one-off case that he gets back into gear, because he, you know, he's like, even Dreamgirl 2 I felt like he was really really smug and really, really unimpressive in a lot of places where he has become synonymous with monologues. You know, he does that. And I think we were discussing it the other day that how his and Rajkumar Rao's trajectories are very opposite, in the sense that, you know, Rajkumar Rao is one who is really the beta male, you know, and he is the one who's the alpha male, and he's struggling with it. And he wants to unlearn and become better at it. But I feel here in Dreamgirl 2, he was just the most annoying kind of an alpha male, and he was I know what you're talking about. I know the wokeism. And it was just really the worst of Ayushmann Khurrana I've watched of late.
Yeah, and I don't think that, you know, sort of dressing up as a woman and, you know, doing item songs basically, and basically flaunting the fact that you're comfortable playing such roles is enough in 2023, you know. We've had a lot of versatile, a lot of diverse stories in across the streaming space, now this cannot be your novelty. That, you know, look at me, I'm a mainstream Hindi film actor, a star who's comfortable enough to wear a ghagra choli or a sari for half of the film and sort of be totally comfortable in my own skin. That's really not enough. You know, your performance has to, the context matters, the performance matters. And I think it was a terrible performance by him. Other than the fact that he was very comfortable dancing as a woman on stage, which is maybe an achievement these days. I think it was the worst of Ayushmann Khurrana in terms of that, playing that angsty Indian, middle Indian male, which he does film after film, where he's rude to everyone, then he becomes enlightened in the end, and where he's just frustrated with his environment around him, and he's supposed to be very funny at expressing this frustration because he's surrounded by characters and idiosyncratic people, but it just is not funny in this film. And because, as you said, you know, this is not an Ayushmann Khurrana film, which is fine. You know, neither was Andhadhun, and Dr. G supported the Ayushmann Khurrana film so well, and neither is Badai Ho in that sense. Badai Do, sorry, in that sense. And so, you know, it's not like we are expecting an Ayushmann Khurrana film, but when you do play the lead role in a film that sort of alleges to sort of subvert gender stereotypes or subvert, you know, gender perceptions, you cannot deliver a lazy performance where you say that, you know, I'm going to try to act like Govinda, I'm trying to act like Varun Dhawan or something like that, and, you know, try to basically play another kind of hero and say, you know, at least I had the balls to do this, nobody else can do this. And so, and, you know, we are not trying to offend anyone. Of course, you know, you may not be trying to offend anyone, but you're very much earning money out of offending a lot of stereotypes within the Indian culture. Within it makes it very easy to crack more homophobic jokes or more jokes about women or more jokes about trans characters. So a mainstream hero like Ayushmann Khurrana doing this role, whether he believes it or not, is very harmful to the overall discourse. And that's why, you know, even I mentioned in the review, saying that it's why shows like Made in Heaven are made, which are go to the other extreme, which are too woke and with overboard in sort of trying to basically defy something like Dreamgirl 2 or Gadar 2. Basically, it's reactive cinema, you know, it's not natural cinema. And that's a problem. If you keep reacting to each other, liberals keep reacting to bigots and bigots to liberals, and nonsensical cinema keeps reacting to oversensible cinema, then we are left with nothing except sort of virtue signaling and posturing on both sides. And that's the sad part, because we saw Dreamgirl 2 this week and we saw Made in Heaven a couple of weeks ago. I don't see a lot of difference in that sense. Of course, the grammar is far better there. It's sophisticated filmmaking. But you have to question the honesty on both sides. And you know, there's a lot of even in Made in Heaven is like, okay, you know, you are used to a certain kind of cinema. We are going to show you what sensible what sort of sensible politics is, what inclusivity, and Dreamgirl 2 does the opposite. So I guess we are in that sort of state where we are torn in between both parts of both sides of cinema, and it's just getting more and more difficult. I had one question before maybe we wrap up. As a film critic and you know, as someone who's writing about film, even I've had a very difficult time sort of in the last year or year and a half, when the discourse has become this way, when the kind of Hindi cinema we see has become this way, I stopped enjoying the fact that I have to keep saying the same thing in different ways. And it's getting more and more stressful with every week. Do you feel the same?
100%. I mean, like for both sides, and I feel that that we have to find the language to also calibrate our feelings, because even though an OMG 2 and a Dream Girl 2, I hated them, but obviously I hated them for different reasons. But it's becoming really difficult, because as you rightly pointed out, that these that it's basically reactive, right? Like what Made in Heaven is doing, or and what OMG, sorry, Dream Girl 2, I mean also OMG 2, they're doing. It's very reactive in a way. And what we are left with is basically two very loud sides, you know. They've just, it's like the politics is very bare. There's nothing covering it anymore. Which, and it's not, it's a very sad time, because I feel that it also colors the way I watch a film then, you know, like, and even though I really try to, try to not be influenced by the in the sense that if it's a show like Made in Heaven, where obviously the politics is correct, but then you have to also constantly remind yourself that this is not enough, which, And when you're watching a film like Dream Girl 2, you know, and it's so easy to be offended by the politics of it, by, you know, and then again, you have to like tell myself, keep, you know, that is there anything more to this? But so, yeah, it is very difficult, because at some point I feel that, you know, you also stop enjoying what you're watching. Like I remember in Dream Girl 2, by after interval, I had completely like checked out, like I'd put my phone back. Like, I'm not taking any more notes, because there's nothing to take any more notes, because it's also very insulting as a viewer, I feel, that, you know, so yeah, it's really not the best time, because I feel like both sides have now, you know, wrapped themselves up in some echo chamber, and it's just that, you know, one has the eye on some social media validation, and the other has on money.
Yeah,
you know, so it really gets very difficult to appreciate films like that. Also, I want to say that for a film called Dream Girl, in both the 1 and 2, it makes absolutely no space for female characters, and even as a performative gesture, there is nothing. Like Ananya Pandey in this, she plays like a ditzy character, and she just comes and goes like that. She's there for 1-2 scenes, and it's really sad. And that's when a film really reveals itself, you know. Like you understand that this is a film made by a man, written by men, and even though they talk about women so much, and apparently there's literally no space for it. So And while writing the review, I kept thinking that there must be more to this. You know, there has to be something. Why did all these actors like Vijay Raaz and Anu Kapoor and even Ayushman, you know, Seema Pava, they came together for what? And it's really sad, you know. And a lot of people, like in my review, I compare it to Kapil Sharma Show, and a lot of people like took offense to it. But, you know, you have to understand that a film should not be like a skit. Like, there has to be a difference also. And if you notice that all characters in Dream Girl 2, they were putting on an act. Like, they were speaking in a certain way, which how we see it on television. They were wearing wigs. Like, it was some hyper-reality which I had no idea about.
Yeah, I agree. And it's as you said, you know. And, you know, it's difficult to be a film critic right now also. As much as people may think it's a really fun job and cushy job and you get paid to watch films, it's difficult to find different ways to say the same thing, as you said. And it is also difficult to find nuance when there is none on either side. And films like Dream Girl 2, OMG 2, the other 2, they offer really no sort of... They offer no space for you even to grow as a cinema watcher, or even to grow as someone who enjoys entertainment, and even to grow as a writer. So that's far from it. So sometimes you have to look for things. You have to talk about these things. Like you just talk about the fact that there's no space for women in these films, despite it called Dream Girl. Same with OMG. You know, it tried to make some grand statement about sexual repression in Hinduism and in general in religion, and it had no space for women except for a female lawyer really treated as a horror film character. But it's just it's one of those things where it's then up to the reviewer, it's then up to the moviegoer to sort of find sort of nuance, find a side and figure it out on your own, because there is only so many ways you can say the same thing, and once you run out of those ways, you can just hope that the movies themselves sort of drag you with them towards some sense of evolution. But yeah, as of now, more than middle of the year now, it's been a not a very good year for Hindi cinema again. Of course, long form is an entirely different ballgame, which we'll come to by the end of the year. We'll have a detailed discussion about that. But you know, Hindi cinema continues to disappoint, gone at least 5 steps back since the release of Pathaan earlier this year. There's not a lot of hope in that sense, but you know, we soldier on, and hopefully we, you know, it doesn't get too difficult to write about these films, because it is sensitive also after a while to write about these films. You do get trolled whether you like it or not, and you have to be careful about, you know, what you're saying, because and what the film is trying to convey, and it's getting more and more. There'll probably be 100 other sequels in the coming years. And especially if this government, you know, comes into power again next year, which looks very likely. So, I guess that's about it with Gadar 2 and with Dreamgirl 2. We end on a very hopeful note, as usual, as film critics who look forward to films every week. Thank you for listening, and hopefully we'll be back about something actually worthwhile, you know, to talk about. Maybe there'll be a show around. There are a couple of shows around the corner which we hope to talk about. Maybe at some point in the near future, we will also talk about Guns and Gulabs, which Ishita has, I think, the last episode. I'm putting it on record here that she has finished watching the last episode, so that there's pressure on her to finish it, and we can have a nice discussion about it, because at least Raj and DK are worth talking about, even if their shows aren't entirely successful, like say Guns and Gulas. But we'll get to that soon. And so thank you for listening. And you can find our reviews on filmcompanion.in and OTT Player. Do write into us if you have any suggestions, and see you soon.